Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We trust you had a great Columbus Day holiday weekend, and we are back now in full swing, looking at the good, bad, and crazy martinis. And as we are now just 4 weeks away from Election Day, almost everything has a crazy taste to it, and certainly our third one will today. We'll get to that in just a moment. The good martini not only is good news, Jim, it comes at a very good time. Because, of course, after the shellacking that President Obama took from Mitt Romney in the debate last week, the only thing his campaign associates could say over the weekend on the Sunday chat shows is that Mitt Romney's a big fat liar. He can't get it right. The only reason he looked good in the debate is because he couldn't defend his tax plan, so just pretended the tax plan that he's been trumpeting for months isn't actually his plan. Well, turns out the one who might not be telling the truth here are the folks over on the Obama side, because they have been citing these independent studies, including one from Princeton economist Harvey Rosen, that the Obama administration says, it just proves that Romney's plan would be a $5 trillion in tax cuts. It would blow a hole in the deficit, or you'd have to raise taxes on the middle class. Well, that's news to Princeton professor Harvey Rosen, who says, quote, "I can't tell exactly how the Obama campaign reached that characterization of my work. It might be that they assume that Governor Romney wants to keep taxes from the Affordable Care Act in place, despite the fact that the governor has called for its complete repeal. The main conclusion of my study is that under plausible assumptions, a proposal along the lines suggested by Governor Romney can both be revenue neutral and keep the net tax burden on taxpayers with incomes above $200,000 about the same. That is, an increase in the tax burden on lower and middle income individuals is not required in order to make the overall plan revenue neutral." And so, Jim, as we are just now a couple of days before the vice presidential debate, that takes away a massive potential argument from Joe Biden. I'm sure he'll bring it up anyway, but his argument won't be true.
Yeah, I was going to say, can you imagine when, you know, Ryan says or Romney says in the next presidential debate, "Oh, let's talk to that Princeton professor. Let's see how they do this. Let's see if he thinks that's an accurate characterization." You know, we see this sort of thing from the Obama campaign fairly regularly. A good example of this comes from my colleague Ramesh Panuru this morning, who notes in Joe Biden's convention speech, he said that Ryan's, you know, plan to stimulate the economy would create 800,000 jobs overseas. That's all he would create. No. And so what's interesting is that the study that Biden is citing for this is some study who said, all right, listen, what would the economic impact of the Romney-Ryan plan be outside the United States? And so he came to the conclusion it would create 800,000 jobs, you know, beyond U.S. borders. But he didn't even look at what it would do on the inside. It was not meant to say, you know, the researcher didn't even address that question. It was just, all right, if the U.S. does this, how does this affect other countries' economies? We can say we want to build jobs here in America, and I would completely agree with that. But, you know, jobs overseas aren't necessarily bad things for us. It's not a zero-sum game. In other words, it's not a matter of our job is to try to screw over every country, other country, as much as we can and, you know, make sure that they don't have jobs. Somehow, the fact that the study did not look at the issue of job creation in America turned into the study has found there would be no job creation in America right, under the plan. Just flat out not true. Greg, I know you'll need the smelling salts, fainting with shock that Biden would get something wrong. This is not just speaking off the cuff. This is Biden and all of his speechwriters. They vetted this comment, you know, and they need this thing to go out there. I think if I'm the Romney campaign, I'm putting my spotlight on that Princeton professor. And I'm just saying, look, you know, ask them themselves. They twist things. They take one sentence out of an entire report. They ignore the contrary evidence. This is what we come to expect from these guys. They have no record to run on, and so they have to demonize us. And this is it's not just that they're demonizing us. It's that they're doing it badly.
Yeah, they can't even come close. And even folks like CNN were saying before the debate that line was inaccurate. So the fact that that's all they're going on here shows just how bad the president's performance was. Jim, on to martini number two now, and polls everywhere just 4 weeks before the election. And depending on the poll you look at, this was a really, really, really good debate for Mitt Romney. The Gallup tracking poll has him going from 5 points down to dead even. The one that's really getting attention is the Pew poll, which had the president, I believe, up either 8 among likely voters and 11 among registered voters. Now it's dead even among registered voters, and Romney up 4 among likely voters, going from an 18-point deficit among women to dead even on the female vote. So when you look at the samples, it's easy to find out why. So on the one hand, there's definitely momentum here for Mitt, but on some of these polls, it looks like it could be a tad too rosy.
Yeah, and people are going, wait, good poll for Romney is your bad martini? You know, have you guys gone nuts? And the answer is, look, Pew, if they're bad, at least you could say they're consistently bad. Meaning that if previously polls had too many Democrats in their sample to seem realistic to us, you know, I am skeptical of the notion that Republicans are going to have an advantage by 5 percentage points on Election Day. If they do, Greg, you and I will be dancing a jig. It'll be roughly about 5 percentage points better than 2004 was, or 5 percentage points better than 2010 was. That basically assumes the Democratic base's enthusiasm, just the bottom falls out, and Republicans are feeling fantastic. Now, I am one of those guys who's always believed that party ID, people's sense of who they are, doesn't change that quickly, doesn't change that much, barring some dramatic event. Now, maybe Romney's debate performance, watched by 70 million people, is such a big event that there are a lot of people who thought of themselves as independents who now say, no, I'm a Republican. Maybe that's the case. I suppose it's possible. I just don't think it's be quite on that scale, because I think they went from D+8 or 9 to R+5 within like a 1 month span. I mean, that's a very big swing in what you think the electorate's going to look like. And so my sense is that you won't see this in whatever polls Pew does between now and Election Day. I don't think it's going to look that good. And so inevitably, they'll be let down. Inevitably, that'll be helping the Obama comeback narrative. It's always nice to see your guy ahead. It's always nice to see things swinging in your direction. But don't get cocky. Don't get overconfident. Usually what we complain about unrealistic polling samples being very much, you know, against us, may be in our favor this time. And to me, I want the most accurate, you know, look at the electorate I can. And I don't want to be excessively pessimistic. I don't want to be excessively optimistic. So as much as, you know, think of the Pew poll as a sugar high, okay? We're all feeling buzzed from the sugar and whipped cream and ice cream and cherries and all that stuff. But, you know, eventually it's probably not, you know, at some point between now and Election Day, Romney's going to hit some sort of rough patch. It's just baked in the cake. There are too many folks invested in an Obama win who will need to write the story about Obama's comeback. And you can even argue that Politico started writing that story on Friday. So just be ready for it. Don't be surprised. Don't get, you know, if the news is great now, but don't be surprised if it gets bad sometime in the next week or two, just because a lot of people need that to be the story, whether or not it's accurate.
Well, on to martini number 3 now, and as we established just a little while ago in our conversation, and as most of you are well aware, the big argument coming out of the Obama campaign following the debate is that Mitt Romney's a liar. Well, we've explained in martini number 1 why that's not true. So now there's one other issue that the Obama campaign is latching onto. Mitt Romney hates Big Bird.
I'm Barack Obama, and I approve this message.
Bernie Madoff, Ken Lay, Dennis Kozlowski, criminals, gluttons of greed, and the evil genius who towered over them? One man has the guts to speak his name.
Big Bird. Big Bird. Big Bird.
It's me, Big Bird.
Big, yellow, a menace to our economy. Mitt Romney knows it's not Wall Street you have to worry about. It's Sesame Street.
I'm going to stop the subsidy to PBS.
Mitt Romney, taking on our enemies no matter where they nest.
Jim, so many different ways to react to this. First of all, this looks like a Saturday Night Live parody, first of all, and it's, I assure you it's not. Secondly, he's citing corporate titans from over a decade ago. I would have thought he would have rolled out some sort of sob story about how kids need all the education they can get. Instead, he comes off with this thing that looks like a parody.
It does. It's a very bizarre one. It's worth noting this is not running in swing states. I don't know about you, Greg. I want Obama spending as much money on that message and airing it as much as possible. My guess is that they thought they could, you know, just get some free publicity on this and kind of, you know, make it appear like Romney's trying to go after Big Bird. Now, as I actually wrote on Campaign Spot this morning, you could argue that as much as PBS is a really legitimate issue to argue about, Sesame Street is pretty much independent of it. As a new dad, Greg, as you know, Sesame Street gets $1 billion a year for merchandising.
Right.
By the way, that's an actual figure. I looked in the PBS. Because of merchandising, Tickle Me Elmo dolls and everything else with the Sesame Street characters under the sun, between that and charitable contributions and stuff like that, Sesame Street is almost entirely self-financing. They say that they describe it as, quote, very, very little funding from PBS, the public broadcasting system. Now, PBS does get money from Congress, from the federal government, about $445 million. That's about 15% of the PBS budget. Now, their point is like, well, it's such a small amount. Why would you bother cutting it? It doesn't really cure the debt, et cetera, et cetera. And my answer is, well, if it's so small, PBS can get by on about 85% of its current budget and then turn to viewers and say, well, we lost our federal subsidy. Can you guys help us make the difference? And my guess is that PBS viewers probably make up a big chunk of that budget, that 15%, maybe all of it, maybe even more. You know, I mean, there's who's to say public broadcasting system needs taxpayer funding at all? The idea that, you know, Mitt Romney's killing Big Bird is flat out false and silly. The idea that this is what I try to avoid the metaphor of their hill to die on just because I don't want to joke about the death of the president. So I just say that when they're making their last stand, and their last stand is on Sesame Street. It's really kind of a bizarre choice of closing issues. They're really convinced that they can make Romney look silly for this. I think they look silly for insisting that any cut to PBS, and we have a $16 trillion debt, is just otherworldly. You know, I mean, this shows that one of these guys is serious about reducing spending, and one of them isn't. And finally, the point you made, it was Fire Dog Lake is a liberal blog that is saying, why can they not cite any CEO that Eric Holder has prosecuted for fraud on Wall Street? And, you know, you talk about the examples they list. Ken Lay died in 2006. So one of these guys, you know, who's like, you know, one of the examples of Walt, he's been dead for 6 years. You can't blame him for 2008. You can't blame him for the state of the economy today. You know, Ken Lay did bad things, but I'm pretty sure he stopped in 2006, Greg. Yeah, you know, why not cite Ivan Boesky at that point? You know, I mean, dating myself with that reference. But yeah, I mean, so this is genuinely a crazy martini, a really bizarre example. You might say this is a sign of either a flailing, desperate, you know, Obama campaign, or it might just be that they're in a bubble where they think they've really got a winning message on this. Their general reaction from not just the folks on the right, but, you know, the quote unquote mainstream folks, they're very skeptical. This strikes them as, you know, I think it was Terry Moran of ABC News who said this is a very silly message at the exact moment voters are getting very serious. The entire conventional wisdom that Axelrod and company are the geniuses may get a serious reevaluation by the end of this campaign. And it you know, this will be could be seen as a very bizarre, unpredictable panic move on their part, trying to you know, change the momentum after the debate there.
So apparently the Obama administration is willing to borrow money from China to keep PBS afloat. They didn't say that in the ad, but I guess that's the implication. You mentioned Ramesh Panira before. He had a great tweet this morning. This ad from the Obama campaign brought to you by the letters L-O-S-E-R. So,
well, I was going to say,
hopefully, you know, that's true.
There are other letters you can use. It'd be a little off color. I'll let readers fill it in their mind. Or perhaps you could say the three letters of, you know, behind this ad brought to you by the letters W, T, and F.
Yeah, I don't.
Winning the future, Greg.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Jim, have a great day. Talk to you later.
See you, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us again on Wednesday for the next Three Martini Lunch.